Well, that's taken a bit of a turn, hasn't it?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
Welcome to Australia's number one classical music podcast, The Step Brewers.
The Step Aficionados.
Time to get really serious, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, what's back, Ali?
Time and Barrels is back.
I called you Ali. That's how serious this is.
Yeah. Thank you, Klimt.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dad.
And thank you, YouTube, for being here for the very first video edition of Time and Barrel.
And it looks just like other episodes. It's a bit disappointing.
A little bit more beautiful. We should have dressed up. And Dennis on the piano. Bravo, Dennis.
Thank you, Dennis.
I don't know how you fit that piano in that barrel, son.
That's beautiful. Lovely. Beautiful.
Well, with me tonight, I have the ever famous Weg experience guy. Welcome. Welcome, young sir.
Cheese cock.
Thank you.
Okay.
The energy just came.
And we're back. Back to normal.
The incomparable Pilly Panther himself.
I'd like to call myself Saison.
Steve.
Sesh Dog.
No, I've got nothing. No, it's Pilly Panther. I'm still Pilly Panther.
Now, I don't want to digress too much, but I do notice your big Litro glass is still unsponsored. No one's filling that for you?
No, very disappointing.
Okay.
If you want to slide into my DMs and fill up a litre of beer of your choice, please let me know.
Could have cronked a couple of these little early access ochos, but anyway, that's fine. That is fine.
Thank you, Weg.
I am your other host, Daddy Sweden. Thank you, Weg. Here to tell you to like and subscribe because...
Wow, Clint's doing the plug.
Because
love it.
I heard from Weg and Ali that that's very important for the YouTube.
That's correct. It is.
We do appreciate all our new subscribers in the last few weeks and it really does help us out. And so if you could like, subscribe.
You really had to think about that.
And if you don't, you're all that kind of stuff.
You're a fucking coward.
All right.
Or a neckbeard or a chonk dog.
Now, our guest. It's been said, if you head out southwest through the bush, over the hills and along a riverbank, you'll find a man. He'll have a wide, wild beard adorning his weathered face, a big knife in hand, his trusty dog as his sidekick. You might spot him inoculating some wort in the bush, which would be perfectly normal and not something to witness and feel uncomfortable about and think about whether you were safe or not. He's the Highness of the Hawaiian Haze, the Baron of the Bunker, Jake Harrison from Ballistic Brewing. Welcome!
Hey guys, thanks heaps.
What on, Mike?
Now, this might be confusing because Ballistic Brewing, Time in Barrel, does this make any sense?
But it really doesn't, does it?
But we're here to talk about some real groggin', which is the Bunker Project as part of Ballistic Brewing.
Yes.
Very exciting episode. Before we kick off, what has been delicious in your glass over this last fortnight, Pilly Panther?
We had a little bit of a shipment of Currumbin Valley beers come down, which has been very lovely drinking. So that included, from memory, what was it? The New Zealand Pills, and then a lot of sours, so the Passion Fruit Sour, the Grape Bubblegum, and the new Gabs beer, the Pastille Sour. So I've been getting my kettle sours on.
Did we get some of that?
Yes, we did.
You didn't get any?
Yeah, thanks.
It's okay.
It's over in the corner of the rest of the beer mail. Thank you for all the beer mail this past fortnight.
I've been enjoying anyway. What about you, Wego?
I'm surprised you didn't say this, actually. The lovely little Pilsy boy from Foreigner. The one that you bought, like, how many cases of?
No, just one case. It was 24 cans, unlike the 16 cans of today, the craft world.
Where'd you buy from, Dan?
I got it from The Great Beyond.
Shout out to The Great Beyond.
More coming on that in a very, very close future episode.
Mm. What about you?
I had a lovely brew day last week on my laptop, before you guys say it, up at Miner's Gold and Ocho.
Laptop brewing again.
I'm just going to say, brews once in like the 3 month span and he's told us about it like how many times? just saying.
Yeah, well, that is the life.
How much hands-on did you do?
Oh, yeah, look, the boys got it done.
There's a lot of iPhone footage coming through. That's all I have to say.
There was. So I had the pleasure of drinking this year's Perps, which was lovely for breakfast. You know what else was bloody lovely for breakfast?
Mm.
The old Ocho Hairy Troll.
What's it?
Which is an intense can.
Mm.
We'll get that up on the screen, Weg, you prick. Yeah, 8.8% rye, real old school, delightful. And then for lunch, we had barley wine, barrel aged, in fact.
Yeah, dessert.
That sounds like a great day on the deck.
It was a really good time. Now, Step Brewers Podcast is presented by Preachers Hobart. Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Preachers for all the cabbage.
Thank you for the cabbage. Quite simply, one of Australia's best beer gardens. Now, everyone is wondering, the winter event, yes. What is happening?
Yes.
I can say that today we got approval to do it and we are organising it. So. But I will say it's going to be limited tickets.
Let's say it's a small capacity.
Do I get a ticket?
I'll say no more. Anyway.
We have to chop one. We know how to chop.
Exactly.
COVID restrictions, I guess, hey?
Now, we also are brought to you by our Patreon. Thank you for you.
Thank you to our new Patreon members, all Patreon members. We do appreciate you for jumping on the Patreon, supporting the show. We love it. If you want to be a part of the Patreon.
If you want to hang around for Raw Thoughts after episode, second bonus episode.
Patreon.com/StepBrewersPodcast.
Is it really? That's wonderful.
Sure.
The bottom tier is really cheap, isn't it?
Yeah, still doesn't have my name on it.
Yeah, $3 Australian.
$3, is that how much it is?
$2.
$3 Australian.
I feel like we're saying this every single episode.
No, I saw a couple come in today and it says $3 Australian.
Well, it's been coming out of my account at $2.80, so you tell me the answer.
No, because you signed up before the changes.
Get in early, baby.
So this fortnight we do welcome Jared Giles, mm-hmm. Rob McKenzie,
ooh.
Bags Bagley.
Bags is part of the podcast.
Did I welcome him last time or not?
Oh. Who knows? Welcome him again.
Welcome again, Bags. And
woo-hoo.
Ballistic's very own Jake Harrison. Welcome to the group.
You didn't have to do that, mate. Everyone else does.
I've been meaning to do it for about like 6 months and I'm just lazy sod. So today was definitely a good day to do it.
Like, it would be rude not to.
Now, before we get into this, I just wanted to check because I rudely forgot. What have you been drinking good last few weeks, last month?
I went camping last weekend with a few mates, oh, yeah. And I had a little cache of mixed firm stuff. Had the Too Easy from Wildflower and mm-hmm. the Post Brewed 2.
Oh, that's horny.
And yeah. Foggy Morning as well. So I had a little Spawn beer that a mate of mine brewed last year as well. So
sounds like a
that
time.
Was pretty cool. Yeah, it was I was super amped to taste the post brewed. I hadn't had it before.
What did you think?
It blew my mind. Yeah, it was just a delight. Really
so waxy.
Yeah, like just it's hard to describe. But I found it stunning. Just the way that honey kind of sat on your palate and yeah, it was delicious. That was probably the highlight of the night, to be honest.
I think that's
and then I woke up hungover the next day and
in the bush.
Sadly, comes with the territory.
Yeah, I think that's one of my beers of the year, actually.
100%.
One and two.
Have you had two?
No,
but it looks good. You know it's going to be good.
Looks good.
These boys got magnums each of post brew two, and I got two half magnums so I could drink them more often.
That's what I did. Yeah. I bought two as well. So I had one now and one for later.
I did think about it. I was like, I could get the magnum right now, but I'm like, I'm never going to open that. I need to get two little 750 so I can at least drink one.
That's
soon.
Smart. I'll probably open my magnum in a few weeks.
You will. I'm looking forward to drinking your magnum. I knew that was also a thing.
Yes. Now, we are drinking a little tasty warm-up beer from
some average back road brewery. Not worth mentioning.
This is a little bit of Eager Beak Saison.
Yeah, it is Saison from Eager Beak. Good old shout out to Star Trek for nearly ruining this bottle as well.
But, it actually feels kind of right to start with a Samwell beer on Time in Barrel, given his little flex on Topher in that episode.
So. Yeah, it's come full circle, hasn't it?
Yeah, lovely.
For number two. What do you think, Lockie?
That's pretty nice. That's all I've got to say.
Okay, fair enough. That's drinking. Good way to start the show and good way to start Time Barrel. We will get into some Bunker Project beers very shortly, but let's get in to the main section, shall we? Doesn't that just make you feel relaxed and just wanting to just...
I know you're very proud of yourself that you coaxed Dennis into doing that this morning.
I knew I had to be here at just past 5 o'clock and got started that project at 3. So
You've done well. You've done very well.
Felt nice. Just put threw that together on the piano this afternoon.
On the piano. Excellent. So Jake, let's set the scene here. People in the brewing community, beer fans, brewers, they're going to know you from Ballistic Brewing. Now, I just before the show got corrected by Young Weg in my pronunciation of what...
That's pronunciation, Jake.
Pronunciation of what I called Coop de Grace.
Coop de Grace.
And what did you call it, Weitz?
Coup de Grace.
Yeah, coup de Grace. People are going to know you from that in the Uber beer nerd scene. Everyone else is going to know you. Number 6 in the Hottest 100. I think the first time we've had a guest on from the top 10. Besides Bolter, maybe?
Jeez, we haven't had Bolter on the show.
Well, we've had him on a little mini interviews.
It's never been released.
But, yeah, Bunker Project. Why are you here for Time and Barrel? Tell us about Ballistic Bunker Project.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I feel a little bit, definitely a little bit scared talking about this when we consider the previous guests on Time and Barrel, that hopefully it lives up to expectations. But, yeah, we've been wanting to experiment with mixed culture stuff for ages, but just haven't really had the setup to do it effectively at the brewery, and sort of juggling, you know, production focused at, you know, like wholesale type production brewery. It was just hard. Like we couldn't really do what I wanted to do properly. And Lockie, our head brewer, was kind of like not super keen for me to start throwing Brett and whatever else around the brewery, rightly so. But basically, I think it was around late 2018 or early 2019, sort of an opportunity came up at a little space down the road from the brewery. Excuse me. And it's, yeah, so we kind of had an opportunity to work really, really close to the brewery in a really cool sort of space. It was like a future development site kind of thing. And it kind of went from there. I've had sort of barrels stashed away places around the brewery for a while, but yeah, we kind of, when was it? I think it was about mid last year. Things started to move on the fit out. And by sort of October, we were in that space. And I was pretty lucky to have a bit of stock that had been sitting around for about 12 months or so before that. But it's kind of hard, you know, like when you're sort of starting a mixed culture thing, really green, it was difficult to sort of get that, trying to get that depth of stock. So that's kind of where we're at. But yeah, it's progressing well now. I think we're really lucky where we're located. Like the place that, I guess the landlord of the site that we're at, they're called Food Connect. They're a regional organic food distributor, basically. So they work really, really closely with organic regenerative farms in the Southeast Queensland region, and source, you know, really cool seasonal produce for the market, for customers in Brisbane and further afield. So we can really kind of work with the people that they're working with as well. So there's a really nice kind of blend there of where awesome. The program can go. Yeah. So that was really the game changer, I think, for me, like where I started to really push hard and look at that site as a sort of home of Bunker. But it's very small, you know, we're not on a scale like some of the other producers. I mean, so many of the producers are small anyway in this space, but yeah, it's a bit of a distraction, I think, for a lot of people at the business, but it's kind of my passion project. So
I was going to say, it must be pretty special to like get that support from the Ballistic crew that it, like, absolutely. Pursue that.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like I think, you know, Lockie and David have been really supportive, and I owe them a lot for sort of giving me the chance. Like, it's been cool to sort of head it up from the start, and you know, design the site from scratch and just kind of go from there. It's a small, modest site. We tried to do it as bare bones as possible, but we got a few, you know, there was a few little non-negotiables for our space in terms of, you know, relating to climate and things like that. So
speaking of climate, you've actually segued that perfectly for me. I was going to ask, I'm sure you'd know, being a huge Step Brewers fan yourself, I'm actually pretty new to the whole craft beer scene. As far as brewing mixed culture beers, and I guess particularly spontaneous beers, does brewing in a climate like Queensland present any unique challenges, do you think? Does it make anything particularly difficult?
Yeah, there's challenges and opportunities, you know, like from a broadly speaking, our biggest challenge up here is temperature. It just gets so friggin' hot in summer.
Yeah.
So from like October to April, it's just, in my opinion, it's just not great for barrels to be sitting at those temperatures for extended periods of time. It just fucking cooks the beer. So
yeah.
I always have this joke where you can kind of do like one summer if you're running ambient temps in barrels up here, and then if you're pushing two summers, you're brave. That's kind of my take on it. So from that perspective, yeah, having a temperature controlled space for barrels was my absolute non-negotiable. Like, I didn't want to be involved unless we had that. So that at least when it does get hot, we can bunker down and just kind of, you know, get stock on ice, so to speak, and just get through that hot summer, and then sort of come like late March, early April, you can pretty much pull everything out and embrace ambient temps again.
I was gonna say, like, we always see down here Will from Van Diemen, and he'll be posting like weather reports, like, you know, it's going to be -3 overnight and only a top of 4, perfect weather for a spawn capture overnight.
And I was like, and he'd be wearing shorts for it as well.
And then I was looking at like whereabouts you guys are, and I'm like, there's no way they're seeing those temperatures.
No, and that's it. Like, we're really, myself and a really good mate of mine, Dan Pedler, have been mucking around with spawn stuff up here for about a year now. This is the second winter that we've actually had a red hot go, and I think we've got about 3 or 4 under our belt so far this winter. But we did a couple last year, and sort of just starting to see the fruits of labor coming out there. And it's a total stab in the dark up here when you're doing that sort of, I mean, it is anywhere, but up here especially, I think our climate's not particularly conducive to making those beers. So we're trying to kind of leverage that and do smaller volumes and see if we can get a few things to work, and then sort of scale those cultures up and try and work it like that. That's definitely like future projects. I've got a beer, I think I'll crack into it soon, but that's one of Dan's more recent spawns that he did, and that was done at like 10 Celsius. It's clean as a whistle. It fermented really fast. It's just kind of like a Hefeweizen. It's a trip. It's not what we were expecting at all.
I was going to say that actually is more exciting when you talk about it as a challenge, but like that lens you put on it, because it's something so unknown, which this stuff already is, but you're getting an extra lens to it, I guess.
So that's a really exciting part of the direction that we want to go. I think ultimately, if we can corner some unique wild captures from up here, that'd be that's sort of the direction we're going. But going back to where you start with a young program, like, I didn't have that to work with to begin with, but we're sort of slowly chipping away.
Well, it leads into my question as well on culture. I mean, Jake, you mean it's often overlooked how long it actually takes to build up a bank of cultures, you know, aged beers and blending components. And you've clearly thought about this with the release of some of your younger beer, which I think we're about to open the Grisette, which I'm looking forward to getting in my gullet. But tell us about your approach to releases, given that the project is still so young.
I think really, I've really enjoyed, certain combinations of commercially available cultures for a few years now. And things like Saccharomyces bruxellensis toir has always been one of my favorites. And, various Brett blends and Brett isolates and things like that. I guess for me personally, I've always sort of, when this project started, it was about, in my mind, trying to get some different angles on cultures happening and just sort of take them in their own direction. So, mm-hmm. I mean, currently, yeah, you've got the farmhouse stuff there. So it's probably a good segue with Graft, the Grisette. So that was, yeah, one of the first beers that we brewed. It is a blend of... Saccharomyces bruxellensis toi. There's some just humble old Bell Saison chucked in there, okay. Which isn't my go-to Saison strain at all, but it was kind of thrown in on like day two. I sort of let the sac brux go a bit, chucked the Saison in on top of it with a heap of Brett, amalgamation and some Clossoni, amalgamation one and some Clossoni in there, and just sort of did a big co-ferment, and that culture's now kind of gone on to become, like, I guess, a Solera culture. So okay. I've added a couple of an additional Saison strains in the next beer and taking it and sort of steering it and trying to make, I guess, a house mixed farmhouse type culture that we can kind of lean in for different things. And, yep. and similarly doing that with barrels, whether it be, you know, darker sour barrels or you know, gold. Sour barrels as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we've just opened the Grisette. And look, yeah. I'm a big fan of table beer myself, and I've got to admit that I'm a little bit naive to the process of, you know, what... I've never even had a Grisette, so this is my first Grisette. Really? But, yeah, unbelievable. Hey.
Does anyone know what a Grisette even is? I don't.
No, I just know it's like from the border of Belgium and France. And
yeah, is I it? Think it's funny.
That's what I did for a bit of a Google this afternoon.
It's a funny one, hey? Like, it's one of those styles that's just kind of been lost to time, and it's yeah. it's going through a bit of a resurgence. So, it was a bit low ABV. It was a bit high ABV for a table beer. It was a bit low ABV for a Saison. So I was like, well, it's kind of a Grisette, I guess. Like, it's in that space.
That's super interesting.
It is what it is.
Speaking of resurgences, it reminds me sort of your journey with black IPAs, Clint.
Thank you, mate. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, that's beautiful.
I do love
that's,
them.
That's a nice thing to say.
Ballistic make a great one.
Smells funky as.
Yeah.
It's got a huge Brett influence, doesn't it? Or the Brux, sorry. Yeah.
It's funny. I think that beer's interesting. Like, you kind of get a bit of stank on the nose. But yeah, absolutely. Translate to palate.
I was so worried when I smelled that what I was going to taste, but it's actually really pleasantly surprising.
It's, the you know, the profile of it, like the mouth feels like super like. Crisp, refreshing, like crisp.
Yeah.
It's like, bright, like it's super, super bright. Bright. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. There's a bit of late hopping involved in that beer as well. So there's a fair bit of Pacifica going on there and some Motueka and Halitau Blanc as well.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, there's a little white wine character almost at the very back. Mm-hmm. We have a friend who loves mixed culture beers.
Huh.
And at Bottle Shares, it's a bit of a running joke that whoever brings the stankiest horse blanket, like wet animals beer, is her best friend for the rest of the night.
You'd win if you turned up with that, I reckon.
And if you gave that nose to Millie, she would be a very happy lady.
I'd say it smells like my cat's face. It's delightful. that's exactly what you want with that kind of beer.
Yeah, we do have a lot of... new listeners to the show since we did Time and Barrel because it has grown a lot.
100%.
When we say stanky, we mean that in a very good way.
Yes. This is
old where posy vibes here.
When stank and funk is well received instead of you don't want that new IPA, do you?
Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's just super bright and like zippy and what a 4.6%. Absolutely lovely.
It drinks like it's lower, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I mean, it dried out to zero. It's completely dry. Yeah.
That's lovely. So for those at home that, you know, don't, well, maybe for Weg as well, and a little bit for me, the difference between like the process between a Grisette and a table beer compared to something like a Saison, is there much difference between those sort of processes or is it pretty much the same?
Well, I think there's a lot of similarities, but by the same token, I personally like to probably push under-modified or raw grains heavier in the lower ABV stuff, you know, trying to drive a bit of that perception of body.
Yeah.
I like to kind of keep the salts down and sort of just get something that's going to be nice and delicate to sort of express whatever flavors you're seeking to, you know, to impart with the raw materials involved. Generally they're pretty similar. Like there's not a whole lot of difference. Maybe mash a little bit hotter and things like that. But even still, I wasn't expecting that to go. That was at zero in like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, wow.
The saison yeast just kind of crushed it.
Yeah. I can just imagine sitting at a picnic, you and I, in a sundress perhaps.
Mad invite.
Smashing this. Mm. It's so refreshing.
I've been guilty of just tucking into a bottle and 15 minutes later it's gone and you're like,
fuck. Whoops.
Yeah. Absolutely delightful.
Yeah, it's that's very special. And if you're being, just releasing, it's a small project, being so young still and be able to make delicious beer like this is why wouldn't
you? Yeah, it's interesting. I got to definitely kind of, there's a few close mates up here that I think we've all been sort of been mucking around with beers like this for a while. Mm. You get homebrew buddies, send you a bottle or something and you're like, fuck yes. I wish I could make this at work. So there was definitely a lot of inspiration from beers I tasted from other people and stuff I'd mucked around with myself at home. So it was kind of like, it wasn't a stab in the dark, when it came to make these beers. I'd made them before, whatever sort of format, but yeah, just that, scaling them up and doing it for real was a nice change for sure than doing 50 liter batch.
Yeah. It feels like this to me feels super polished. This doesn't feel like the first release from a new mixed culture. like not tooting your horn, but it's just stupidly crushable, really balanced. Can't stop staring at how pretty it is.
Yeah, and it came out really well.
Yeah,
and then the nose leading into that really super dry, but it's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess huge, kind of props to Voyager. You know, that's 100% Voyager, that beer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it's, off the top of my head, I think it's Compass and Triticale and some Winter Wheat and what else is there? Oh, oats. Yeah, there's a fair bit of oats in there.
Yeah.
Bloody delightful.
Yeah. Oh, it's good to be back at Tom and Barrow, isn't it?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, same to you, sir. Back. Yeah, that's very good. No idea what I'm saying at the moment, but it's all, as long as it's in the glass and it tastes good, it's all that matters.
I just can't believe the contrast in what that's like on the nose to what it tastes like is bloody ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's all I've got to say.
Now, it does kind of smell like a fart.
I'm glad you said it, not me.
In a good way.
Yes.
Now, is this approach to, did you want to talk about this approach to younger beer now, Ali, or in terms of, I guess, bringing a younger beer to market first, or?
I sort of, touched on the approach of younger beer and what you have to do to, how you approach it. So up to you now and your next question, sir.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I think it's really cool putting out a grisette like this, but there must be a lot of pressure when you announce, the Bunker Project and you're going to put out mixed culture beers. And I mean, you said you've had some barrels still lying around, but, there's no way you're going to have a stock something that you can draw some acid from here and that from here. How do you sort of deal with that pressure of I guess, Josh from Black Arts had our favorite analogy. He talks about painting. He's like, oh, I need some yellow and some blue notes and this.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Is brewing something like a grisette or, even I think Topher's approach to doing the table beer is probably going to change the game for a lot of the new mixed culture players that come in next. Because it's almost like the whiskey guys doing a gin. It gives you something to sell and tell your story.
Some time, right?
Yeah, it's a great way to put it, to be honest,
Is that part of the approach of putting out a young, super clean, beautiful beer like this?
Yeah, 100%. There was no other option really, from my perspective at least. The realities of being in a position where you can blend and package and release, mixed culture barrel aged stuff is that's a year's proposition as opposed to months, realistically. So yeah, it's been that balance between trying to fill as many barrels as I can, you know, source decent barrels, fill them accordingly, whilst trying to make stuff like this, to sort of fill the gap of time, until we're starting to have enough back catalogue of stock, aged stock, to sort of, you know, put together, whatever, you know, barrel age creation or whatever in general, just kind of having aged beer of whatever description on hand to facilitate those blends. So, but at the same time too, like I love farmhouse beers so much, and we won't stop making them. Yeah, they're just a huge passion of mine, and yeah, it was kind of a good situation in the sense where we could just lean on these sorts of styles for a while and muck around, even with a bit of like more new world kind of spin on these beers, like,
yeah,
as well, and just kind of have a bit of fun. And then, you know, now finally we're in a position where we've just done our first blends. We've got, you know, 15 month age golden on apricots and nectarines now, and sort of building things, and
ooh, yeah,
it's starting to get there. But yeah, it's a slow burn for sure. And similarly too, like I don't see any benefit in just getting like subpar product out to market.
Yeah.
At the detriment of everything that you've worked for, you know, like it's just not my,
yeah, not definitely,
my MO. Yeah.
I think the farmhouse beers too, in terms of like continuing to do them. Our mutual friend James Lewis said this today. He's like, the Australian climate lends itself to these beers so well. Like,
perfectly.
And particularly your climate. Like, crushing this in hot Queensland weather,
yep,
I can't think of anything better. And it doesn't slow you up. Like, it's super dry and nimble.
Yep. Yeah.
I think there's definitely a big place for that still. And I mean, obviously we want all the fun blends. But if we can have something in between, and if, you know, turn up to a vent and have a few of these to start the night, like, absolute ripper.
Yeah, and that's what I'm finding. I'm buying a lot more of these sort of beers, the more and more I'm getting into my craft beer journey. It's like, you know, the amount of times I've bought things like table beer, and, you know, I'll be constantly hunting for things like, you know, this grisette. It's like, it's what people want. Like, it's what I want.
Yeah, and I mean, even being in the middle of winter right now, like, you know, you and Weg are still buying cases of table beer.
Yeah.
So there's definitely, I think, a bright future for that kind of thing.
Yeah, just because it's winter doesn't mean you shouldn't drink a Saison.
It's like people who only drink stouts in winter.
Yeah, death to them.
Fuckwits.
Now, we talked very quickly on it earlier, but, you know, you've got the separate space for the project, obviously. You know, the rest of the crew don't want you bringing your filthy Brett barrels into the nice clean brewery.
Stinky, fart dirty, smelling.
The dirty one. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the setup, and I guess also a little bit about the operation. So assuming that, you know, the brew house at Ballistic is what you're producing your word on. But in terms of the setup that you've got in the second building, what are you working in there with, you know, for the brewers and the beer nerds?
Yeah, absolutely. I always kind of describe it as a lot in a little. Like, it's literally, I think our total space is now 140 square meters or something. Like, it's pretty small.
Yeah,
it's small. But it's basically a 60 square meter, like, cold room, for all intents and purposes, with air conditioning. That's running off solar. Food Connect is a super sustainable site, and so we're really fortunate to sort of be able to power our AC through solar, which is great. So we'll run, we basically, I can cram about 80 barrels into that room if I'm really serious. You know, currently there's about 50 in there. Small barrel room, but temperature controlled. So I can kind of literally just cram it full if I need to in summer, and just kind of lean on stainless and things. And segueing into a small cellar space, which is not very big at all, maybe like 30 square meters. It's really small, with two 25 hec fermenters. They're matched to our brew house at Ballistic. So I can kind of
get
1,100 liter IBCs of wort straight over from the brew house, fill up a tank, rock and roll that and either transfer to barrel or, you know, for example, graft is, that's 100% stainless. That hasn't spent any time in barrel. So it's unique side in that regard that it gives us a lot of flexibility to sort of lean into stainless, as well as obviously like barrels first and foremost, but having that sort of, you know, 50 hectolitres of, you know, 5,000 litres capacity of stainless is super handy. I kind of wish in hindsight I'd like smaller tanks, but it's just, we had the tanks like kind of there and just the way it panned out really. But yeah, so it's very small, but it's kitted out in a way that I can work quite efficiently. The biggest issue I think for us as a business, more like holistically, is obviously just making sure that our protocols when I'm moving things from bunker back to the brewery are a rigid ditch. I, you know, invested in a steam generator, a small steam generator, just so I can like nuke the IBCs pretty heavy before I take them back and things like that. But there was a few little like must have kind of items from a like a cross contamination mitigation sort of standpoint. But I mean, really, like, yeah, I think we've got it to a point now where it's a pretty smooth transition. I can sort of take my IBCs over, cleaned and stairs ready to go, and then the brewers literally, you know, connect up our wortway and
awesome.
Hit it with 85 degree water straight away and fill the IBCs, and then I just take them straight away again. So
that's awesome. You know,
they come in pretty clean and they're off the brewery floor and out an hour later.
And that's an awesome like setup, and from a relationship perspective, to not have to, you know, develop that with a secondary business and stuff, like to keep it all in house, is just a massive hassle saver.
And it made fit out costs so much cheaper, you know, like, you know, the brew house side of things is, I mean, there's not many really mixed culture producers in the country that have the luxury of a brew house, really. Yeah, I mean,
barely any.
They're a minority, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So we're in that boat too, but would you use
those stainless as well for, like, you know, I think Ali's going to talk a bit about fruit later, but in terms of like carbonic macerations and using them as fruiting tanks, or are they too big?
Probably a bit too big. I'm in the process of getting more like leaning into more of like the VC tanks, single skin stainless VC tanks. Like, they're cheap and they work, and it's just it's just easy. So yeah, we've got a couple of those now, but I'm probably looking to get a bunch in the next 6 months. Looking at sort of what the sort of harvest schedule is looking like in our region. I mean, yeah, summer's huge, so just sort of trying to get ready for the summer months when the fruit starts rolling in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you know, was going to ask about fruit. It just seems like a natural way to roll into it. I know you did mention that you've got some peaches and, was it nectarines, was it?
Yeah.
Already underway, so that's exciting.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, they were, it's kind of funny actually. Like, they became available when I wasn't ready for them.
Always away.
Beautiful product. Organic.
Whole fruit, obviously.
And apricots, whole fruit, from the Granite Belt out near Stanthorpe there, a couple hours west of Brisbane. They came in around Christmas time and I just couldn't resist. So they sat in the freezer, sadly, for a little bit because I just didn't, the beer wasn't quite ready.
Yeah.
They're chugging away in an IBC now.
That's exciting.
Smelling pretty good.
Very nice. You want to continue doing a lot more fruited beers in the future. Is there any particular fruited ales that you would like to do?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm really, really just excited to work with the producers that I can get introductions to through Food Connect. Their reputation locally for working with quality, you know, organic producers, regenerative farms, all that is, they're well respected in our part of the world up here. So they've just got some incredible contacts. It's just made it so good to, so kind of like a bit, I'm sort of brainstorming harvest season now. It could go different ways. I think just trying to be flexible and having the base work there ready to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, even now, like there's some really, really good mandarins around at the moment, and I'm sort of like, oh shoot, like I didn't really plan for that, but fuck, maybe we could.
Marmalade vibes.
Yeah.
Here's a question for you, and this stems from the wildflower episode. So, you know, TOFA has the New South Wales only approach, and we sort of put that to him. Does that limit wildflower and the beers they can produce? Because there's obviously certain fruits that aren't available in New South Wales or just, you know, hard to get. Flipping that around a little bit, you know, you're in Queensland.
Mm.
So, you know, for a Tasmanian mixed culture brewer, there's some obvious things that we should definitely be using.
And not to be using? Like
banana. And not to be using too. Like, why would a Tasmanian brewer do a mango beer is a very good question I think anyone should ask. I don't think anyone has, so hopefully I'm not digging into anyone.
I think you're safe there, my friend.
But in terms of Queensland, like, does that actually, because you guys are so young and figuring out what you're doing with this project, does that make it quite difficult for you to try and, I guess, find identity through your state, or do you want to just do everything?
Yeah, personally for me, I kind of have a, I guess what I want and what the business wants might be slightly different, but I digress. But I think for me, like I really am really, really excited to work with what's available in the region seasonally. And being up in Queensland, we're just spoiled. Like we have really, really amazing variety of fruit, and even sort of get lucky to get some sort of more cold climate stuff coming out of the Granite Belt in summer.
Yeah.
There's grapes out there. We've got a lot of things covered up here, and I almost feel like I couldn't use it all if I tried. Like they couldn't make that much beer. There's so much tropical stuff that we get access to as well that we're really fortunate.
That's where the climate does come in handy for you guys. Yeah, not so much for the actual barrels.
We're in a subtropical climate, so we really have access to a broad palette of produce. And I really would like this bunker project to kind of be a pillar for sort of sustainability and stuff like that. So I'm really passionate about trying to source things as local as I can and from farms with integrity. Is something that I'm pretty passionate about. So, yeah.
I just can't stop staring at the Saison.
You've just poured this. So, did you want to tell the listeners, because we do have some non-YouTubers still, what you've just poured?
Well, I have opened the second bottle from the Bunker Project here, the Shapeshifter Farmhouse Ale.
You just cracked one. Lovely.
With Brettomyces, and I'm not going to butcher any explanation of Saison or the process of it, because I can let Jake go for that. So take it away and let us know a little bit more about this beer that we are drinking right
now. I just loved Wegg's reaction. He's like sitting over in the back corner behind the desk, and he just goes, oh, yeah, that's it. Very good.
Good summer's day beer, Wegg. What do you reckon?
Could definitely smash a few of those after mowing the lawns in your overalls with your cowboy hat on, carrying a chook under your arm.
You know me too well.
Yep.
But yes, Jake, I've
had one of these for a hot minute, so it's good.
Well, you can run us through what's going on.
He's poured himself a little whippy boy there.
Fucking head on that.
He's poured himself a little whippy boy.
That makes me
see,
horny.
I wanted to do that, but I knew I had to share with three other people in this room, so I couldn't do that.
Guts and drink it all myself.
Good boy.
Samuel Midler is just up and about at this point, full horned.
This is very special grog, may I just say. This is drinking very nicely.
Yes, it's a bit different. It's kind of, I guess, a very modern interpretation of like a hoppy farmhouse sort of beer. It's Sactoir and Amalgamation One. Just fighting a good fight, really. But heavily hopped. I think I've actually, in my... talking about graft earlier, I got my wires crossed. This beer has got the Hallertau and the Motueka in it. The graft was just Pacifica and Tet Nang. I'm just just a space cadet. But no, this one is, yeah, Motueka and Hallertau Blanc, sort of heavy in the whirlpool. And then Motueka and Eclipse in the dry hop.
Yeah,
the Eclipse comes through quite heavy. But
yeah, it's
but
almost
not
pithy, almost, but not in a IPA way.
Yeah, so it's stylistically, it's a bit of a mashup, but it really kind of is a bit of an epitome for some of the beers we've been mucking around with at home for a while. That Sactoire amalgamation blend, and then hopped pretty heavily. Like it's kind of bulletproof. I love beers like this that sort of kind of blur the lines a little bit. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, the hop character is really beautiful, which is I wasn't actually expecting too much, to be quite honest. Like,
yeah,
it's really coming through. Fuck.
I remember, I think someone might have sent me or I saw your post about this beer and sort of, you know, how you guys set out to, you know, create one thing and then Queensland and what happened just created this, sort of one of those happy accidents that you probably like, you know, grin a little bit, maybe a bit of a shake and bake under the table. Mm. I can definitely see what you mean in that post. I was just having a look back at it because I'd remembered you tagging Dan Pedler about in it and saying, you know, thanks for the help. But it's got that pineapple bread, like, it's got lots of fucking layers.
It's got stanky, it's good stanky just, fruit.
It's good. So both of these beers that we've tried so far, I feel like on the nose have been so not what you'd expect when you taste, like, the graft. I've never smelt anything like that in a glass before. I didn't have high hopes. I was like, gee whiz, this is going to be rough. And then it's like, oh, actually, that's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And then this, it's like almost really reserved. I don't know if that's the right sort of phrase to use on the nose. It's not too over the top. You're not getting too much.
Delicate.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you taste it, you actually, once you have a few sips, you know, you get a little bit more coming through on the palate, and it's a little bit more complex maybe than you get from just having a bit of a sniff.
Look at him.
He's
go.
Growing up. Yeah. He's growing up.
Look at him.
Yeah, boy.
I know he's nervous to say things about beers like this, and look, so am I still.
But Time and Barrel episode one, you were a mess. So.
Oh, fuck me. I was a sweaty hot mess when Time and Barrel fit one.
You're as sweaty as this beer.
At least you weren't on camera.
Nothing. Yeah, well, that's true. Now I've got to look like I'm not sweating. It's fine. But this is
absolutely fucking delightful. Yeah, in terms of first offerings, both beers, absolutely fucking delightful.
Yeah. Put it in cans, sell it in a case, and you know, it would look lovely alongside.
You reckon the grisette in a can?
Hey,
you want grisette in a can?
Oh, I'm talking about the shapeshifter. Ooh, shapeshifter would be good in cans alongside the table beer in my fridge.
Keep the shapeshifter in a bottle.
I don't have enough space in my fridge to put about seven saison, bottles of that.
You don't put a saison in a can. That feels wrong.
Just doing.
Let's go back a bit to your barrel stocks that you've built up. What's your approach on building a bank of cultures and flavors? And I know that you mentioned this a little bit earlier, but you know, are we going to see some wild catches as part of those bank of cultures? I know it's something you were briefly talking on before. It seems to be something you want to do.
100%. Yes, short answer. It's just a case of sort of building up what we have to sort of, you know, get things of quality. I'm really, really excited about this culture that Dan got a couple of months ago. That just completely caught me off guard. You know, when he sent me a photo of this thing on, like, it was like day two after getting the spawn back, and it was in a fermenter and it had this beautiful white fluffy krausen on it, and it was totally clean, and it was such a trip. Like, I think of that culture as having a lot of potential. So early days trying to work with some microbiology friends on that. We've been working with Ruth Barry a little bit and have sent some of our spawn stuff to her. Ruth's ex-Fortitude. She's been down at Creatures, or White Rabbit rather, for a while, and, you know,
Are you trying to isolate that strain or?
Well, that one hasn't. Ruth's been working with some of the stuff we did last year. This newer strain's not with her, but we've got some contacts up here, and I'll probably look to get some down to her as well. We just want to sort of share the love with that stuff, and if we can get some help isolating and things like that, that's great. I'm a bit of a hack at it. I can do it on the ghetto, but it'd be nice to work with some people with the right facilities. But that culture, the most recent one, is definitely the most exciting in my opinion, as something that if we could isolate that and it is as it presents, then that could be really cool for like wits and things like that. A wild type banana clovey sort of thing. It's really delicate and lovely, actually. It's just spun me out when I tasted a bottle for the first time, for sure.
Was that the one you were saying that like gave you the full like Hefeweizen vibe?
Yeah, really, really did. Like had a really pronounced banana profile, like probably a bit more so than you would expect from most commercially available hef strains. Particularly like given there was just stock wort, like there was no base grist for any such beer. It just the way that yeast expressed was really cool. So we'll see. Long term, yes. But short term, work in progress.
Yeah, because it's all sort of coming back to me now when you talk about that stuff. It's like, certain cultures, there's certain strains within those cultures that, some that you like, some that you don't want. Mm. And you've got to go through this whole plethora of different strains. And it's like, it just boggles the brain on how it actually works.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Mm.
It might be that you isolate, three different strains out of that culture that all have similar characteristics, but only one of them's able to attenuate and the one with all the good flavor profile doesn't, like who knows, you just don't know. So, so I try to keep expectations really low.
when you and Dan are heading, I assume, out bush, this isn't a joke heavy episode like most of ours, but Weg, if you want to flash up that photo just here of Jake with the giant knife and the coconut, that'd be great. I think everyone needs to see that. When you guys, I'm assuming, head out bush, how are you running those captures? So we heard from Topher, gave us a really great rundown, which I think was really good for some of the the brewers who don't dabble in this space. So if you guys are heading out bush together, what's the process for doing a capture like that?
Yeah, we've tried a few different things. Originally, we acquired a kind of upcycled cool ship type vessel. It was about 300 liter or so vessel, like something big enough that we could fill a full barrel. Yeah. We have dabbled with that, particularly last winter. There was a couple of barrels filled and some smaller captures as well. But this winter, we've kind of moved away from that and focused more on smaller captures, more like about 20 to 40 liter captures, enough to sort of fill a carboy that you can kind of monitor closely at home. And then once, if things are going in a good direction, you can package some product and move on with that culture and upscale it or whatever. Or dump it or whatever you want to do. But so I think last year we definitely were suckers for punishment a little bit, and it's hard. Our climate is, even in the dead of winter, it's not that cold in Brisbane. I'm based in the city in Brisbane, and we don't get that many days in single digits, a lot really. So we have to drive for at least an hour or two to get to areas more in the hinterland or on the tablelands, the granite belt, etc., that are much colder than it is here. So that's our preference. Yeah, we've got to get out a little bit to where we get more suitable overnight temperatures. So last weekend we did one at, like, I think it got to 8.
That's warm for
home. No, that's that hot.
Beer,
I think when I was driving home for lunch today at about 12:30, it was 7 degrees. So
yeah, I had a yeah. I had a singlet on at work. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Crisp. Oh, dear.
Yeah. So, but I mean, that said too, like, you know, there's, you know, you've got, you know, there's brewers in Hawaii doing spontaneous stuff that are creating some incredible beers.
Lankai in particular.
I think we had one.
Yeah, right. So, I'm really keen to sort of just challenge the stigma that it has to be cold. Like, I mean, granted, I'll probably fail 10 times more often, but if we can pull off some unique stuff, then that'd be really great.
That's just the Belgians trying to
make it. And it's a good excuse to go drink piss in the bush, right?
Yeah, I can imagine there's some pretty fun camping trips when those spontaneous have. I saw a photo of Govs and the boys doing one of their little spawn captures, and they look like they're having a good time.
That one cracked me up. That was fucking classic. the setup in the creek with like it looked like a caustic drum or something, and then there was like
if you drive past, you'd be like, golden, "What the fuck are those guys doing?"
Yeah, it's like I used to be a big fan of Moonshiners on Discovery Channel. It's basically the same thing.
That's a vibe.
Yeah, there was a bloke called Jim Tom who had subtitles when he spoke.
Oh, no. If that ain't America, I don't know what is.
Exactly.
Imagine all the fucking cultures.
I miss Jim Tom.
Yeah. All right, bringing things back together. So I guess the only thing left really for us to talk about at this point is to put on the hard tag and ask, what can we expect next from Bunker Project?
Oh, the clickbait.
Oh. You want future releases?
I want future releases, baby. I want details. I want that classified intel. Exclusive world firsts.
Okay.
All the good stuff.
Because you've liked what you've tasted.
There is so the fermenter that had graft in it, I've basically been doing a 20 hectoliter Solera kind of on that tank. Mm. So the cone of graft had a higher gravity saison wort racked straight onto it, and I pitched some White Labs. Like a 50 liter starter of some White Labs Belgian Saison 2. So there's an extra 2 Saison strains added to that culture now in that tank. So that beer is now packaged. It's just conditioning, hanging out. It's been about a month in bottle. So that'll be our next release. Mm. So there's that. And then that same cone has gone again. And I did a lower ABV table beer.
Here we go.
Our boy.
That one is, I'll probably dry hop it later this week, actually. So
we'll be there.
I'm going to be dry hopping that with Meridian.
Oh, okay. I haven't used Meridian.
Yeah. No, I've just like dabbled with it a little bit, but I really like the profile. It's that, you know, I like that New World Noble kind of thing. I think some of the Charles Farm UK stuff that's coming out is pretty cool. So I'm pretty eager to go down that road with that beer and just get some nice lemony, citrusy sort of vibes. And still have that sort of classic UK delicate floral kind of character. Like I really love, I think EKG is one of the best hops on earth. I fucking love it.
You are wrong. Maybe.
Jeez. Sorry.
That's You'd rare coming from you.
What do you mean?
Switzerland.
Yeah, no, I'm totally Switzerland. You can use EKG if you want to be wrong.
I like the delicate nature of those hops though. Like it's a little bit higher alpha though, the Meridian. It's got a much higher oil content, and definitely more of a New World sort of profile.
Mm.
So it should work kind of cool. And then we've got a bunch of golden sitting in IBC. So there's our sort of select blend of 15 month old stock. That'll get packaged in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, as long as it passes gravity. I think it's terminal. I'm just hanging out to get one more read, and then I'll probably pack. So that's sort of the first table. Mixed culture, barrel aged sour that we will release. So that'll be probably September-ish, maybe a bit after.
I'm so here for it.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
Yeah.
Super exciting.
So
bloody hell.
Let's flip the whole new release concept a little bit and imagine it's 5 years from now. Bunker are putting out two beers.
Klimt has a beard.
I've grown a beard.
That's never going to happen.
I think I could fucking do it with the right drugs and injections.
I think you're past that point, to be honest.
And Bunker are producing two beers. They're about to launch. 5 years' time, your ideal world. What are those beers?
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, dream.
Honestly, I hope there's still some farmhouse stuff coming out. That will be like the absolute. Yeah, so really nice, zippy, low ABV stuff. And the public have a thirst for it in 5 years and they want it more and more. Ooh. That would be good.
You would hope so.
And then honestly, just I think one of the other ones for us is fully certified organic would be a goal for me.
Yep.
Yeah. That's kind of a long game. So 5 years is probably enough time to get that done, I reckon.
We've had a lot of people, you know, who really come on Time in Barrel wanting to push that. So, I mean,
yeah.
And that link you have with the organic producers is going to be so critical.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been chatting with Stu a lot at Voyager. I got to get down there and go catch up with obviously the Voyager guys and then, you know, some of the farms down there. There's a couple of farms down there doing organic grains. I know like Topher talked about this a lot. So I've got an open invite to go down there. I'm just waiting for Pangolin's Revenge to calm the farm so I can go down and catch up with those guys and do a bit of a road trip. It'd be sick.
Definitely.
I think by next year like all of our grain will be organic for Bunker. By sort of early to mid 2022 is sort of my goal for that. So we can commit to, you know, a few base grains and just work within that space and just try and sort of, you know, do our bit there and support those guys down in Riverina area. And
it's tasty malt. Makes tasty beer.
So good. So that's definitely a big focus is to try and push organic. Like hops is hard. If we're getting our own yeast and we've got, you know, the fruit and the grain, then
why not?
Even Topher lets the little motorweka make its way in, you know. everyone gets a free kick on that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Jake, I know you've been dreading this all episode, but I am going to throw it to you. One of our favourite segments on the show, can't let you get away with it. It's time for Give Us Your Gabs Pitch. Let's bloody do it. Give Us Your Gabs Pitch. I want it now.
When's that music video coming?
Oh, geez, we really do need to do it. And just every time we hear it, I'm like, oh, geez, seeing ourselves on a hill with the wind blowing, sea in the background, just being complete dickheads. It's going to be a great time.
Sultry electro vibes.
Yeah.
I really struggle to cut that out when it gets going. Yeah. I'm just every time I'm like, oh, I could just.
Was it Smokey who made us play it out after episode a couple of times and he wanted it as his ringtone?
Still got to look after him with that. We still got to send him that MP3.
You can find it on Spotify.
Oh, geez, I hope not. He's probably got two streams. Anyway. I think you know how this works, Jake.
I do. I'm probably the worst person ever for this because, yeah, like I... I'm not one for Gab's beers in general. I've kind of...
You love them.
Historically failed. I've never made one until this year. And even that was pretty rushed.
Did we trash you on the show or not?
I probably deserved it, mate. Like, yeah.
What did you make this year?
Yeah, what was it? I can't remember.
It was called Brunch Date.
That was on my list of the ones that I really fucking wanted to drink.
Weg chose that as one of his number one beers to try. Did you try it, Weg?
I didn't. I only had the Crumbin Valley. That's more of a reflection on the system than your beer, so don't take that personally.
We always joked, honestly. Lockie and I have always joked about just doing like just a straight, super traditional, decocted, like Czech, like Pilsner, German Pilsner, Czech Pilsner.
All these guests keep saying that, but none of them are genitalia on the table.
Yeah. I know. Yeah, I think it should be done. We've never, like, until this year, it was the first year that we actually even did one. I've always just kind of sat it out and not contributed. But fuck, I don't know. Like, on the spot.
Is it Bunker Project or is it Ballistic?
Oh, maybe one from each.
Oh, jeez. How about you just let him get away with doing one?
No. We'll see what flows in the old one.
We could just do, like, something like just like carb mass, like a couple of hundred kilos of fruit, and dilute that enough that it's liquid enough, and then just 100% Brett ferment, and like obscenely bitter and offensive. I don't know. I really don't know.
Sounds yummy.
That's definitely not going to pass the economics test.
A smoothie Brett sour.
Oh yeah, we could do like one of those like rancid like ice.
Oh yeah.
With Brett and
it's like smooge with Brett, but it but it smells and tastes like a boost juice store that like got shut down during the pandemic and just never reopened.
That's good.
Yeah.
Put that in my
phone. I think Smooge with Brett is the perfect name. Like that. We could put that on the 5-year plan as well, Smooge with Brett.
I wanna see it happen.
I actually want to taste
Gab's that. Gab's 2022.
One day.
Yeah, a Bunker Steppies collab beer, Smooge.
Oh, don't say that.
Well, all you need to do is win Brewery of the Year and then we'll collab with you.
Jesus.
Well, I mean, Topher's not returning Weg's calls, but that makes sense.
That is true. Well, after what you tried to pitch to him, yuck. Absolutely disgusting.
Yeah.
I think one day. You go, Jake.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, I'm fucking terrible with Gab's beers. I was like, I didn't even think about that when I got on here and you said, oh, Gab's beer. I was like, oh, fuck.
Smooge with Brett.
Smooge with Brett's good. That's high up on the list. I think one day we'll have to go back through all the episodes, find all these beers and list them out in a hottest 100.
get people do the public vote.
The real hottest 100.
Can't for all of them.
The winner must be brewed.
Oh,
that's a big call. Oh, wow. Someone write this stuff down,
you
please.
Heard it here first.
Tommy Delmont will be shaking in his boots.
Cannot wait to get that poo beer brewed. All right.
Sam Bethune's just going to start scooping things out of his drains weekly just in case.
Oh, jeepers.
Love it.
Jeepers creepers. Very good. Any other questions for the table?
I got nothing.
I'm just very excited for Bunker Project, to be quite honest. And look, very pleased to finally have you on the show.
Absolutely.
You've been a guest on our radar for some time. And this Bunker Project, once we started seeing some reviews, was a great excuse to get you on.
Yeah, so. we haven't even got Ballistic on the show. But
we haven't had Ballistic on before.
You know, it's good to kick off Time and Barrel with something that you are obviously very, very proud of and something that's like your little baby.
Very rightly so.
It's a very good way to kick off Time and Barrel series. So we do thank you for your time. It's been
thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolute.
It's been great.
Absolute pleasure. Step Brewers Podcast is brought to you by Preachers and also our lovely Patreon, of which, Jake, now you are a member. So
we thank you.
Post-episode, in a few weeks, you're going to see the video of what we talk about after this episode in all its raw form.
It might not be good time stuff. And barrel themed, let me put it that way.
Yeah,
we might be unleashing.
I'll be
program.
Drinking a couple of drafts, probably a Larry or two, probably insulting someone.
That sounds good.
Back to classic Steppy's actions.
Very good. Well, we bid you all adieu and thank you again, Jake. And we'll be off now. Goodbye.